Welcome to the Mindful Surfer podcast with myself, Will Foster, and my co-host, Liam Morgan. Liam, what is the news?
The news?
And is it related to Skibbox?
We're definitely not talking about that again, and apologies. For those people that are still listening to the show, Will will never ever start a show like that again. No, the news is, the Mindful Surfer news is, waves are back. We've had some more waves.
Yep.
Because I think at the time we recorded the last show that everybody would have listened to, we'd had a little bit of a drought, hadn't we? Mm-hmm. So we've been back in the water, in the surf. We've had some clean, crisp, offshore days, which have caused some incidents to talk about, which we'll come back to later.
Yeah, we're going to come back,
we'll come back to that later.
Little teaser, some skirmishes.
And then we've had, you know, last night we went in and you were in for a long time. I was working, so I only got the last light. Some howling onshores back, which definitely thins out the crowds a little bit here, doesn't it?
It must have, well... It seemed to.
Yeah.
There was still a fair few in, but it's just an amazing workout. It's constant. I think we probably did about 14 kilometers of paddling, and the wind was 30 miles an hour directly in your face. Taking off on a wave was literally like being on a donkey that's just taken ecstasy. hasn't slept for 3 weeks. I don't know where that analogy came from.
There's probably a TV show in that somewhere.
There maybe is, actually. Dennis the donkey bucking you around. I mean, challenging like you can't imagine. The thing about where we live that is a huge blessing is that when you finally get on a clean face, 4 foot-ish, that bracket we all love, chest high, head high, when you get on that kind of wave and it's clean and powerful, needs to be running down the line, it is just so much easier. You've done all this training here. We only get waves when it's howling wind and onshore. That's generally how it works for us. One hang-up I have, which is total bollocks, it's all my own issues, is this thing of, you know, the fair-weather surfer who turns up when it does go clean here, because it does clean up once every 10 surfs, and you get these, a load of blow-ins, we call them, and they come from all over the place, and that happens all over the world. No matter where you live, you will get your surfers who come when it is at its best, and then you get your locals who surf it no matter what, kind of thing. And there's this bollocks, ego-y bit of me that's like, where the fuck were you when it was...
Yeah.
Onshore and whatever, and it's crowded, and where are all these people from, and what are they up to? And at the end of the day, it's utter nonsense. It's a series of thoughts that are based on the illusion that it's my beach and it's my town, and it's utter bollocks. And I know it is, but that's the journey of life. We're working our way through our bollocks, literally sometimes, because mine get trapped a little bit sometimes when I drive, so I have to kind of quickly chuck my hand down my pants and pull them back up. I mean, that's quite a common thing for blokes with giant balls like mine, but it's...
I'm going to start a timing. This is 3 minutes in and William has mentioned something to do with his body functions or genitalia.
When have I ever talked about balls and bum holes and pubes? I mean, it's not like I only talk about that every single time, but do you know what I mean about this kind of thing with the ego?
And this is the Mindful Surfer podcast, as we say quite frequently, and we are often talking much to ourselves as we go through this kind of realization of where we are and what we're doing and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to sort of combat some of those things around the mind that are detrimental to the enjoyment of a session, that interrupt the flow state, that interrupt the vibes and the energy that kind of come with surfing. And the big one for us both, and I've fallen into this trap as well, is the kind of localism that arises when crowds come for the better days that are there. Absolutely. And there are so many triggers in the water. And if you're listening to this, as you said, from as a, in inverted commas, local who lives near a beach and gets to surf that regardless of the conditions. And then those days when it's a weekend and the conditions align and everybody can paddle out because it's not howling and it's not on the shore, suddenly you've got to contend with unfamiliar faces. Often people, other human beings, it's their right to be in there, of course, who are not following what we would define as the rules, if you like, the etiquette of surfing. And so already you are looking at some of those people through a prism of judgment, and that we always talk about trying to get out of judgment. And once you're doing that, any move they make, you are already sort of on a heightened sense of alert to say, hang on a minute, what are you doing that for? And we all drop in on people, even us locals. I did the other day, even during the sort of, and there was a lot of triggers in the water on that day around.
You do it loads, you're the worst.
And so, you know, you've got to put your hands up and say, it's not a case of, you know, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. But by God, it's hard, isn't it, sometimes when you've got those days where the influx come. And seemingly we're supposed to be in a lockdown. So I was surprised how many locals had sort of suddenly showed up at the beach the other day. But it was a very difficult sort of, for a long time in the middle. So we had a morning sesh where it was great and there was not many people in. As that drifted into a, you know, people who were driving down to the beach managed to kind of arrive. Suddenly you find yourself in a crowded lineup. And that really troubled me for a while until I managed to clear my head, clear my mind, move to where you guys had gone as well, a little bit kind of quiet at the point down the beach, and suddenly you're back in the flow. But for a good hour and a bit of the session, I was in a place where I was getting very, very frustrated.
It's an interesting one, how crowds are managed worldwide. It's a study in itself. It's an incredibly interesting socio-psychological study, because different cultures have different ways of operating through, let's say, hierarchy in that way. And if you were in Hawaii and you paddled out to the peak, you wouldn't get a look in. And there would be an absolute assumption that if you take off, even if a local is ahead of you in the peak, he's going to take off with you. And then that ain't going to be considered even a drop in. And if you expect to then take that guy off the wave and call him off the wave, or her, or whoever it might be, you're going to get your light smashed out. And that keeps the hierarchy in play. That sure as hell keeps people in their place, which is that you kind of earn the respect of locals and you work your way into the lineup, etc. Where we live is an incredibly friendly break. On the complete other end of the spectrum, locals are super friendly. You couldn't ask for friendlier locals where we are. And I think that's where I'd want it. I wouldn't want it any other way, really. Yep. It's just that what can happen is that people, you know, take advantage of that. But I think the thing is that one thing I've had to do over the years, and because listen, no matter where you're listening to this, except for, you know, sort of northern Canada or surfing the very south of Argentina or some
Iceland,
freezing place with some giant beach somewhere in New Zealand or wherever. But generally speaking, if you're listening to this and you're a surfer, you're going to deal with crowds to a greater or lesser degree. One thing that's helped me tremendously that might help you too is catching myself firstly when I'm getting frustrated. That's the most important thing. And then secondly, playing this little mind game of, it's like a mantra. It's like a one line thing. And it's just same goal. What that does to me is remind me that every single one of you in that ocean, every single last person has the same goal. No better, no worse, no greater, no, I was going to say worse again, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's like there's no one in there who's quote unquote better and more deserving of waves. Yeah. Really, truthfully. Although Hawaiians might tell me, you know, no, that's not the case. It's helped me raise my vibe again. And when the vibe comes back, it's really humbling about being in a crowded lineup, is you find yourself not getting waves, not getting waves, not getting waves because you're frustrated. Then when you're able to let that go and get back into a good rhythm, bang, you start getting waves again. It starts flowing. And that is a mystery in itself. I mean, we've talked about this. Your vibe attracts your waves.
Yeah.
If your vibe is in this frustrated, angry, annoyed place, you ain't going to get the best waves. But when it switches back, it's quite profound. You notice it. I have this all of the time. I was in the sea and this guy was on a stand-up, and I find that frustrating at times because they can take every set wave going. And we've talked about this a number of times on this podcast. And a lot of the time, more times than I'd probably like to admit, truthfully, I sort of almost look away because I can't even see them get the wave because it pisses me off that much because I just think it's so unfair. But on this occasion, my better self, my true self, which knows only love and only abundance and no such thing as scarcity of how many waves I'm going to catch, just hooted and hollered this guy's wave, which may have been a surprise to him. But when I did that, I then go over the brow of the next wave, like this little sort of horizon over this lump. And I looked down the net and there was just this perfect bomb left. And I did three or four turns, cutbacks to off the lips and whatever. And it was amazing. And that kind of thing's happening constantly in a surf, especially when it's a little bit more crowded. Do you find that, dude?
I do. And I think on the sub, because we'll get to this point. I had a slight run in, almost physically, from the part I was nearly run over by a sup on this busy day. And I'll explain the situation. I'm sure the chap in question's got another view of it, but I'll come to it in a second. But when there's a flow to the dynamic of sharing waves, it helps a lot, doesn't it, with the experience? Because that's why when you surf with friends and people who know the rhythm, actually, we should say hello to Ads from the Grumpy Surfer, because
we
bumped into him a few times and surfed with him. And I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but he's a surfer that's very aware of his surroundings and who's surfing and where they're surfing and when. He's a great surfer. And so he's got an etiquette to him and a way of performing that, getting into that rhythm of flow with the other surfers around him that makes his presence a real joy in any line of play,
yeah,
I imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
So just to sort
it's
of
a say, cracking insight.
Hi, Hyatt. And then this is kind of reads me into my not very mindful incident with a supper, because when you then have somebody who is the antithesis to that, who doesn't appreciate the kind of etiquette, and the reason we give subs a hard time really often is because there's a propensity for it to be easy for those guys, mostly guys. In fact, I've never seen a female supper doing what I've seen blokes do in the lineup.
No,
ever. And they've got better visibility of the set waves coming, as we know. We've talked about it many times. They're able to take those waves ahead of anybody on any board, long or otherwise. And if they keep paddling back to the same peak and doing it over and over again, then it gets quite frustrating because they're starting to interrupt the flow of the sharing of waves. And as I say, everybody's human, so everybody drops in and everybody makes the mistakes, and that's absolutely fine. But then, you know, my pet hate on this, once you combine that with a starting to kind of make the lineup dangerous because you're not only taking those set waves, you're taking them at the wrong time from a safety perspective. So it doesn't matter who's in the way, what level they are, how they're trying to avoid you, and you still go for it anyway, and then actually physically kind of run into a few people as you're doing it. That becomes a bit of an issue because not only are you interrupting the general flow of the kind of surf experience for those people there, but you're also then starting to encroach on what we'd sort of said before is a safety zone. And so when we had this clean day, and I did allow my mind to get troubled, I'd seen this happening a few times with this one dude who was sort of on a sup and had a kind of unorthodox style of sort of getting into the wave. And then sort of once he was up and running, didn't matter who seemingly was there, he said he was turning around them, but I couldn't see very much evidence of that. So we've talked a lot about having the strength of character sometimes. If something is troubling you in the water, particularly from a safety point of view, you've got to go and speak your mind. And I may have sort of overstretched it a little bit in terms of because I was quite frustrated and wound up. So I went and had a word with this guy and just said, look, I've seen you do this 3 times now. You've run into at least 1 or 2 people and you just nearly taken me out. You've got to stop, dude. You've got to kind of look around. And he's quite defensive and sort of paddled away. And I don't think he necessarily stopped completely, but at least I felt that I'd sort of done my bit. And after that, I'd exercised my own demon of just sitting there with my arms folded, muttering to myself, thinking, I can't believe he's done it again. I actually did something about it. And that to me was a lesson in its relief. And thankfully, it didn't come to any major fisticuffs. But you have to be prepared that just because we are mindfully surfing, or just because we are talking about everybody has a right to the wave and the opportunity to surf, doesn't mean that we become passive humans where we let things go if there's a time to speak up, because that's being mindful in itself, is drawing a line and having the strength to try and take it on when it crosses that line.
Completely agree.
Is that my rant over?
It's great, dude. There's no rant whatsoever. And when you came over to me, I was already further down the beach. You came over to me. I could sense you were rattled, understandably, and you got a lot of adrenaline pouring through you, etc. And you discussed what went on. And once you were then down there, you had like a little sanctuary of kind of space again.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what space does.
Yeah.
For humans, when we have a little bit of space, Jesus, we're not designed naturally to be all crowded, huddled up, like on a tube, for example, on the London Underground. You know, that's the most unnatural thing for humans to be clustered together like that. We all want a bit of space. So it's totally understandable. One thing I'll do if it starts to get crowded is I will generally, 9 times out of 10, paddle somewhere else. And that's what I did on that day. And then because I've paddled somewhere else and I'm feeling better normally about that, even if the waves don't look very good to where I've paddled, with the way vibration works, it's fascinating. It's because I'm then feeling better because I've got space again, the waves come. You want to try and get that across to someone who's really in the physical plane only, never sort of delves into that inner world of vibration, and say to them, say, look, dude, this is kind of how it can work. You can allow the waves to come to you if you just get your vibe in it. It just would get the strangest look.
I know.
The most strange look. And then who am I? Who is little old me here to convince someone of that kind of thing with some kind of way of explaining why? Because I don't even know why. I know it on such an intuitive level. I can only know it for myself. I can't try and advertise it and argue it for someone else who's not in that realm, because you just got to go there yourself. And you only then know it for yourself when you experience it yourself. So it's an impossible thing to try and just, although I'm trying to describe it.
Well, that's what we're here for.
That's what
we'll keep
for.
Describing.
At
folks.
Least trying to describe things. Well explained, you. Very, very well explained. And it's not easy. I've had times before where I've spoken up to surfers and it generally doesn't go down very well to the surfer who is hearing what it is that I'm saying. But as long as I say calm, I can't control what they're going to do. And if you're listening to this and there are people who take the piss, don't feel like being mindful is having to get out or being mindful is having to go to another bit of the beach if you don't want to go to another bit of the beach. Sometimes it's okay to dig your heels in a little bit and know that someone's crossed the line to fucking say something. That is not being mindful. In fact, there's an argument to say it's even more mindful because it takes courage to speak up when someone's taking the piss. It really does. It's not necessarily more cowardly, I wouldn't say that, to just paddle away if someone's being pissing you off. I would just say it could be a calmer way of doing things.
Yeah.
But it takes bravery.
Yeah. Well, sometimes rather than walking out and thinking, I wish I'd said something.
Mm.
It's like, I'm just fucking going for this now. You're going to hear this, whether you're like, now I think as calm as I could be because I had seen a little bit of the red mist, which is unusual for me, really. That's why I knew I was going to go for it because it takes a lot to kind of really get me to that point where I was wound up. But there is a point in there around the mindset that I'd allowed my mind to get caught up in also not just being in my own surf. I'd been watching for this guy as well a few times. And once you're then it's like focused on something, you can't do anything else but focus on that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of finding that balance of saying, I don't mind what other people do. That's fine. That's up to them. But when it becomes like a safety thing and everybody's getting pissed off with it, but nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to eventually get hold of the situation and start tackling it.
And that's really good, dude.
Yeah.
We'll navigate this avenue of being in crowds, surfing over and over because there are just so many angles, so many nuances, so many stories to tell. Because in a way, amongst many other challenges as being a surfer, it could be up there as the greatest one because it's not necessarily the conditions themselves or the board or getting to the beach in the first place or whatever it might be that's the most challenging thing, although they are all challenging things. It's other people. That's really where we find ourselves because we get triggered, is the word, by other people possibly more than anything else, to a degree. Because we make up all these stories about how they are. Oh, they're a wanker and they're like this and where are they from and what, you know, and it is all stories and it kind of starts to infect your brain. But what we want to use this show as a platform is to learn how to calmly navigate that. And part of that calm journey is, like we just said, is fucking speaking up.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay quiet when someone's taking the piss.
Yeah. And also walking that line, like you said, not judging, because we're all in there for the same reason. Even the guy that is being, I'm not talking about this particular, but even the sort of worst offender, he's still in there to get the most out of his surf. So it's just, how do we all get along? It's a microcosm, isn't it, therefore, of life. And you go, well, how do we all get along? This is in a crowd. To get the best out of it for everybody. And then that's a merry dance because you've got different levels, you've got different surf craft, you've got whatever. How do we all get along to get out? Which is why, fundamentally, you remove the crowd and you remove other blockers, like let's call them dominant surf craft that get priority, you know, that have got the upper hand, let's say. So they have to be more aware. Tom Hewitt talked really well about that. And you go, okay, once those things are out there, you don't have as much to worry about. So it's easier to access that flow state. It's very hard to access a flow state, personally speaking, when you throw all those other factors in. So it's working on techniques to overcome that. When it's the only time you can get in the water.
So true. And what I also find amazing, and this really intrigues me, it's this thing where you can be surfing. And I'm sure you've experienced this if you're listening to this now. If you haven't, I'm surprised because the sheer fact you're listening to this show means you were mindful person, or at least on that mindful journey, so generally have a high vibe. Now, you're in the lineup, and when the vibe is high amongst all the surfers, it could be quite crowded, but it just works. What the fuck is that? Well, that is the mystery of the universe. That is the mysterious element of attraction and vibration and flow and how it all interconnects. And we can be out with 10 great surfers who all have that kind of positive mindset, good vibes, people sharing waves, da da da. And it's as if you're just constantly getting waves, even in a crowded lineup. And then it's amazing how there could be just a few of you out But if one person is being crazily greedy or aggressive or is really lowering the vibe, it can really shift the whole surf. And even if there's only a few of you, you can be like, whoa, this isn't working now. Do you know what I mean? It's quite a fascinating study.
Most people are decent human beings, aren't they? But there are a few, I'm afraid, dickheads. And that's the, we've said before, that's a dividing line in life. It doesn't matter where you're from, what you do, what you look like, what you're into. I don't give a shit. There are nice people and knobheads. And sadly, you know, how do we get through to those knobheads? I don't know. It's an ongoing thing. We had a session, didn't we, quite some time ago, I think maybe a few months ago, where everything aligned. We had this sort of junky, weird surf at the beginning, and then it cleaned up. And there were loads of people in, and the surf was peeling in one of the spots that we surf. But everybody, and there were some strange faces in there as well, everybody seemed to just bring this great vibe. And then suddenly, everybody's getting great waves. Everybody's happy for the waves that every other surfer's getting. And there becomes this rhythm and this flow of how people take waves and use waves and split peaks and all of that stuff, which for me, as somebody who's trying to improve all the time, just makes the flow experience so much more defined and easy to navigate.
It is. That's a great insight. Love that.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the Mindful Surfer, segment number two. A couple of minutes just to raise the awareness and connect with your breathing. Just settle everything down. Just feel nice and calm. So take a deep breath in through your nose. And breathe out. Take a deep breath in. And breathe out. And breathe in. And breathe out. When you take your next deep breath in, I want you to hold your breath at the top. So take a deep breath in through your nose. Hold your breath. And breathe out. Next time you do this, next time that you take a deep breath in and hold your breath at the top, what I want you to do is really pay attention to what you can see whilst holding your breath. So take a deep breath in. Hold your breath. And breathe out. Good work, guys. The breathing element in how it relates to surfing is when you're feeling like you're out of the vortex, so you're getting frustrated with your own surf, let's say you're not performing the turns that you want to be doing, or the board is annoying you, or the wind is now changed and that's affecting how you are surfing, or the crowds have kind of crept in and pissing you off, whatever it might be. We discussed this aspect of being in the vortex and being out of the vortex. Now, being out of the vortex is you're now out of that vibration of flow and allowingness and acceptance and patience and calm persistence and all the good stuff that gets you the best waves of your life. When you're out of that vortex, it's as if nothing works. No matter what you do, taking off, people are in the way, the waves don't come, .. The best way to get back in the vortex of flow and how letting things kind of happen again and getting that stoke back is to create stoke from within. And we've discussed this a lot of times. You've got to bring stoke in order for stoke to come to you. So it's a really interesting scenario, this. You've got to be in alignment. Here's my one for the day. You've got to be in alignment with stoke for stoke to start to happen. If you're out of that stoke rhythm, it's like no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, it is like knocking your head against a brick wall. It just ain't going to happen, no matter how much forcing you do. So the gateway to come back to the vortex of flow is always your breath. So you're in the sea and all that shit's happening and you're out of the vortex and you're just having a great time. If you want to come back to that place of flow, the opportunity is always right here. It is just the breathing that we practice every single week on this show. And it's in through the nose, out of the mouth. In through the nose, out of the mouth. Take yourself away from the crowd for a little bit. You'll get waves again. It doesn't have to be this constant fight and rush. It's like we're sometimes in a rush. Like, oh my God, if I don't get 30 waves, I'm not going to be happy. It's like, just slow the fuck down. By the way, I'm saying this to myself.
Always.
Because I know I'm one of the absolute worst. I'm so impatient. In surfing, I think, I want your thoughts on this, Liam. I think one of the biggest lessons it's teaching us is patience.
Yeah. I was just trying to find actually some of the, because Matthew Saeed, the sports journalist and kind of thinker, writes a lot about the kind of interruptions of mind and how the mind can get in the way of what your body knows, what it wants to do. The mind is an interrupter, isn't it? So trying to sort of identify while you were talking, just which book that was in. I think it's sort of Bounce maybe, but there's a lot of good stuff in there around that. Once you kind of get away from that bit where you've got all of those interruptions about, and what it is often is expectation. We talked about it before, isn't it? It's setting the expectation of what it should be like, and what the serve should be like, and what the conditions should be like, and what your performance should be like, and the should. That's always built on this kind of, you know, foundations of expectation, whether that's too high, it's unrealistic, whatever it might be. And then when those expectations aren't quite met, the mind is questioning why those expectations are not being met, because it isn't perfect conditions, it isn't whatever. Then that's when you kind of get that sort of interruption, for me. Kind of you've got all of the things that you come to do in the, let's call it the preparation for, the training for those moments in a surf, that you, if you do them right, your body then takes over automatically, knows what to do. So stretching, strength training, nutrition, hydration, all of those things, layer on layer on layer, and you relentlessly practice, and you practice, again, we're talking to ourselves, I'm talking to myself here, you practice on your surf skate, you practice on your on-land moves that do all those things. And then when you get into those situations, if you get into that sort of way where you can sort of meditate, breathe, as you're saying, you get into those sort of breath work that's all part of that sort of those building blocks, it resets your mind, hopefully, and then your body can do all the things it knows how to do anyway.
Mm.
But if that sort of chain of building blocks is not there, if you're not at the practice, if you're not, if there's something missing, which is why we talk about doing all the things as part of this mind-body experience to kind of get better at something or to improve at something, doesn't mean you're not enjoying the here and now. It just means that you're looking to improve. If you put all those things together bit by bit against something like your Kaizen theory that you mentioned, then when you do go to back to that breathing, regardless of the conditions, your instincts take over and boom, you're back in that sort of flow state.
Fantastic.
If that kind of answers that.
No, it does. It makes perfect sense.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show.
If you connect with what we do here at The Mindful Surfer, why not share it with your friends? Or go on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Because the more ratings we have, the more likely it is Liam and I can come back week after week and keep building this community of mindful surfers. Now, let's get back to the show. Segment number three, mind, body, stoke. Things Liam and I have been doing with our minds and bodies to raise stoke. Now, for me, it's masturbating 19 times.
Oh my.
Last week was 18. This week, 19. A bit chafed, a bit raw.
Hang on, we've had a complaint from one of our listeners here.
Oh, have we?
Oh,
too,
it's
too many,
oh,
willy, too many willies.
Sorry, I was just looking at. I was just looking at who. It's your mum, actually.
Oh,
he says, "Dear William, please can you stop talking about the following subjects?" Well,
this is maybe the problem. I wasn't told off enough when I was growing up. I was just allowed to say this stuff. That's the issue. For me, body wise, well, I'll start with the positive. The positive in aspect of surfing, one of the big positives, is calorie burning, exercise. Okay. The challenge in that is, how do you manage your, not just appetite? So that's the portion itself, the size of the portion. How do you manage that and what goes into those portions when you've had a proper sesh? Now, surfing just creates that hunger, doesn't it? It's incredible. Like, oh my God, you get in the house.
Yeah.
And you've discussed this. Oh my God, there's the Doritos. There's the, and it just, and you know, before you know it, you're waffing down food without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Not being mindful.
And places like the Thatch and Billy Budd's, as they were in Croyd, were built on selling mountains of cheesy chips to hungry surfers, right?
There you go.
And cheesy chips.
And that's probably a business model for surf shacks that sell that kind of stuff around the world.
Yeah.
You know, how can we give surfers what they really want after surfs, which is, you know, carby, fatty, proteiny, like real dense calories. Now, it's really, really fun. Obviously, I love eating those kind of meals and that kind of stuff. The challenge for me is staying lean whilst doing it, right? So that's the balance. It's like, still have your fun, still get loads of your food and still load up. You deserve it. You've been surfing, all that kind of stuff. But how do you then work at avoiding all the extra shit that can really get down your trap, that can basically ruin your surf journey? Because let's be perfectly frank, you're at your leanest. You're going to probably surf at your best. I mean, they go inextricably linked. The link is, it's easier to paddle. It's easier to snap. When you go to do a turn, bending your knees is easier. Like every single thing that goes into your surfing physically, is that little bit easier when you're leaner. Not lean to the point where you're like, unbelievably lean slash starving slash tired slash like malnourished. I don't mean that. Obviously, that's down the other end of the spectrum. But I mean right in the middle, that bit where you got some good energy in you, what we call your fighting weight.
Yes.
Sort of thing. And where I want to bring this insight onto is, for me, I definitely went on that journey just recently. Now, for me, staying lean is reasonably straightforward. Not that I don't put on body fat when I take the piss, which is where I'm going with this anyway. But I've been consistently leaner in this last 12 months. And there's no doubt I've done the best surfing of my life in the last 12 months. Partly, if not mostly for me, because of my body fat percentages. I really believe in it that much. Because I feel the snap, I feel the turn. Like everything just flows a bit better because you're more athletic.
Yeah.
You're carrying less kilograms. It's just basic math. It's basic physics. For me, like all of us, we can lose that humility just like fucking in an instant. And I started to eat more. We were getting lots of little surfs in and I started to eat more. And I was eating this cereal after dinner, this healthy, it's called paleo cereal. This kind of is full of coconut nuts, da da da. It's got a little bit of honey on it, whatever. And I was loading it up with coconut cream, not just coconut milk, coconut cream. It's fucking with cinnamon and so good.
Sounds great.
It's really good. With some raisins on top of everything. It is not food I needed. It's food I wanted. I was supplying the palate, you know, that little sugar craving because I'd been surfing so much. And then did it day after day after day. And then actually was starting to notice my definition was slipping away a little bit. And then went on the scale. I don't hardly ever go on the scale. I thought, I'll just check on the scales. I was like, whoa, okay, you got to slow down here, buddy. And the thing I really want to get through in this moment now is that if you feel like you either want to maintain a certain level of body fat or want to reduce it, calmness is the key. There is no forcing. If you try and force yourself to trim body fat, you're now going on a diet. And guess what's going to happen? When you force anything in nature, you get fucking kicked in the ass. You start to feel tired. You get cravings. You feel grumpy. You've reduced your calories too much. You've basically created a burden on your system. You've got to do it very, very mindfully and just very, very slowly. And the big word here is be patient.
Yes.
It's the biggest word. It's like the biggest word we talk about in surfing. Like, what is the biggest virtue I think we're all learning in surfing, maybe even in life, is patience. And so I stopped eating the cereal. Was it easy to do? No, because I got kind of a little bit hooked on it. It wasn't easy to do, but I've made sure that when I go in the supermarket, my mind goes there, and it does, trust me. It starts going, oh, God, that cereal. And it starts to think of all the feel-good factors around it tonight. Oh, it'll be lovely, you know, watching telly. And it's just that, the chewy raisins with the crunchy coconut and all that. And you've got to be able to notice all that going on.
Certainly.
And then let it pass when you're in the supermarket. And carry on getting your veggies, getting your meats, getting your whatever you eat that you know you need for your body. And for me, this is a big, big one, is not have it in the house. That is the biggest hack for staying or getting lean, is do not have the chocolate in the house, do not have the crisp in the house, the cereal, the this. Because if it's there, we know what willpower's like. Fuck, man. Before you know it, you've thought about it, you're eating it, and then bye-bye. Sayonara.
There's a couple of things here. One is, I'll come back to this, what you're surfing for. So there's some people who are surfing to, and there's nothing wrong with that. I've been there myself, and I find it much harder than will to discipline, but I'll talk about resistance, discipline, and then gains in a second, because I've walked this path with you guys. I've been there. The first one is like, what are you surfing for? If you're surfing because you like the Post Pint, and I'm going to use them, there's free advertising for these guys up there, the Thatch. I've not been in it for a long bloody time. But let's say you go to somewhere like Croydon, you surf and you're just having fun and you want to go out and a Post Pint, beer and chips. That's absolutely fine. This is not us lecturing. It's kind of like, what are you surfing for first and foremost? And do you want to make improvements in surfing? And I speak from hard experience, especially as you get older, it's a lot harder to shift that once you're doing it. It's very, very difficult to make the improvements that you want to make in your surfing if you don't also make them in your choices that get you to a point where you can surf more easily. And by more easily, I'm just talking about your movement patterns are better, the mobility of your joints is better, the strength is better in everything from your ankles to your calves to your thighs to your legs to, you know, right up the chain into your back and your arms and so on. So you have that almost from the ground up, you sort of build yourself. And you can't do that if you don't have the willpower to go through these periods of resistance and beat the resistance, because there's always going to be, as you're saying, Will, is that if you have things in the house, it makes it harder to resist. You're having to lean on that sort of willpower a little bit more. And it's just another thing that sort of is a hurdle to jump. Whereas the easier you can make it for yourself, the easier it's going to be to make those gains. So removing all those things from the house is definitely a way forward. But the other thing is that, like improvements in surfing, there is no gain. There's no shortcut, is there, without resistance. I was reading this book the other day and it sort of said, oh, if you want a shortcut to this, I think it was puppy training or something like that. you go to this page and it says, go back to the beginning. There is no shortcut. Nice. This is a hard journey and you just got to go on it. And it's the same with improvements to anything, isn't it? If you're improving mind, body, spirit, even if you're trying to hack and access, when we get into our woo-woo stuff, the Joe Dispenza sort of, you're trying to get into the field, if you like. You're trying to get into this sort of energy plane. It is not easy because also as human beings, if things were easy, the gains wouldn't feel as good. And therefore, it is just putting that one foot in front of the other, regardless of what this is. It might not even be surfing you're doing this for, is that you do something every single day to try and make yourself improve, get better, feel better. Insert whatever you like there. Laugh harder, surf better, have a better time, get on with your family. You know, whatever it might be you're trying to improve on. Be better at business, whatever. Be better at music. You can't do it if you don't put in the hard yards as well. Mm. But if you break those hard yards down into sort of the day routine or bits of your day, and you achieve something every day, then going back to that Kaizen theory, that sort of everyday, you know, micro improvements, micro gains every day add up to a lot over a long time. And then suddenly you are surfing the best you've ever surfed. Don't worry about comparing it to anybody else. It's, is it the best you've ever surfed? Mm. Does it feel good? Do you feel good? Is the experience, are you dialing more flow into the every surf you have? And probably the reason you're getting that is because of all the stuff you're talking about. When I started back on this journey, and Will and I have trained together and surfed together, you know, I was carrying the injuries, but that came from too little movement, too much of the wrong food, too much of the kind of making excuses sometimes that it was this injury and that injury. And really, it was all about fitness, training, repetitive routines that take you to the next level. And if you don't do it, you won't improve.
It's really cool. So it's kind of like that kick in the bum. I think that finding that balance between a kick in the bum and an arm around your shoulder is an art form in itself. Because I know that I can be too hard on myself at times. And there's no need to be. You know, that act of self-love is always there. It's always a choice. If you just have it, if you take a breath and allow yourself to be, you know, allow yourself to be in the shape that you're in.
Yeah. And don't punish yourself for wherever you are now.
No.
You're right, it's self-love, because this is the realization, in a way. Don't know if you felt this as well, Will, is that when you go through these kind of, let's call them transformations, or, you know, you're trying to sort of throw off, peel a layer back from day to day of what you think you are, what people think you should be. Only you can really make the change, and no one else is going to do it for you. And that's one of the hardest things to sort of sit and admit to yourself, and on any journey of doing something better or improving, is that you can bring in people, and we were going to talk about coaches and getting coaches and that sort of thing around you to help you. But ultimately, unless you've woken up and are able to say, actually, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm human, so I'll stumble and I'll fall and I won't make those improvements all the time. Overall, I want to do it enough that I'm going to start making that change. Then it's possible. But if you're looking for somebody else to do it for you, pretty much in anything we're talking about here that is difficult, you ain't going to get the gains without buying into it yourself.
Absolutely, dude. My wife's on that journey, interestingly. She's wanting to definitely trim down some body fat and get better shape. And we've talked at length about this. You know, she says to me, you know, I'd love to be able to, you know, have the discipline you have. And because I talk about all the habits that she might want to include, like the stretching and the training and how you eat and how you monitor your calories and getting enough sleep and your mindset around how you see your body in itself, like self-love that we just discussed, like all these little factors that go into the whole being that is you in your fitness realm. And it can seem like a lot. And what I say to her, I say, honey, look, the thing for me is it's a huge blessing having a sport that gives me my why. You know, why am I ignoring the, well, not ignoring it because I clearly had the thoughts, but why am I ignoring the thoughts that I'm having around that cereal that I was going to buy in the supermarket, which was fattening me up? Why am I letting that pass and not buying it? Because I got a why. You know, why am I doing a 20-minute stretch in the morning? Because I've got a why. And you keep going. And the why is everything. There's no motivation issue. I do not have that. It's just right there. It's a most beautiful blessing. It's a beautiful cycle. We discussed this last week. It's that cycle between doing what you can do now that will make your surfing better. And then when you feel like your surfing's getting better, continuing to do what you have been doing that's been making it better. So it's this constant, lovely circle of motivation, which isn't even motivation. It just, you just do it. So for my wife, it just being about shape, what I was trying to say to her and try and get across to her was, I was like, honey, that's a toughie to make that the why. For me, when I've had that in my life, I'll give you my experience. I don't find the motivation, because you really need to be like fucking motivated if it's just about shape. And so therefore you need to have arguably a massive ego, and to be really vain, to make it just that, the amazing thing with shape as to why it can be such a dodgy motivator for a lot of people is that when you actually even finally get into this so-called promised land of a six-pack or a slim waist and a round bum or whatever it might be, you look in the mirror and go, is this it? Like, I thought this was going to make me happy. And you're like, this whole being in great shape thing is fucking overrated. But what isn't overrated and what is massively, massively in this society, underrated to a huge, massive, as large as my testicles degree, I've gone there again, is feeling good.
Oh, yeah.
Because
Amen.
That is what we're after. And that is why I want to do what I do with my routines so that I can then feel good. And if I feel good, I take Stoke into the ocean and get the most out of the ocean. That's the formula. But if I am doing it to look good, it just doesn't ever have the depth of motivation in it.
I completely agree with that.
It lacks depth.
And look, give me a six pack and I'll tell you how it feels.
Thank you very much.
but I absolutely, this is where I put my old man's hat on and the benefit of life and all
A-O,
that.
Blood. A-O.
If you are chasing something purely aesthetic, it becomes the same as the perfection fetish that we've talked about surfers having, kind of Michael Finnegan mentioned in Barbarian Days. You go, well, it's never there. Even when you get to it and other people say, wow, that's it. You're already have shifted and go, that's not good enough. Because you never reach the destination, especially if it's only about a look. An aesthetic is about a look. And it's about your mind telling you, in first and foremost, and this is why self-love is important, and we have to try this ourselves as well, is to go, if your mind's telling you that you're not good enough from just a physical appearance, that's not the place to start. It's about being happy with within yourself and making gains for something else. Like we said, you train for life. You just want to feel as good as you can feel in this life. The body's a gift, isn't it? Let's get on and enjoy it. But if it's about lifting your shirt up, and we all kind of fall into this trap when you're into fitness sometimes, and looking in the mirror, who, yeah, shit, looks good, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And if you make that the be-all and end-all, there's nothing else around it. Whereas if that, and when you look at unrealistic visions of, not unrealistic visions, but when you look at visions of whatever the world considers to be aesthetically beautiful, often in the sort of real healthy, functional fitness element of that, they are byproducts of doing something else for something else. I use boxers often because I think boxers have a fantastic physique, although I never got into that shape when I was boxing because I wasn't boxing very well. I wasn't boxing very professionally. But you go, it's a great look. But it's not a great look because they're working to look good. They look good because that's a byproduct of them being functionally and fighting fit. And that's why that is a sort of the warrior physique is there. And you can see it when you look at people who use their bodies all the time. It's not just through looking and pumping iron just for the mirror. And of course, people can achieve it by doing that. But the functional fitness that comes with doing something that you love and enjoy, and then the byproduct is that. Not that's the only reason you do it.
Totally. You're doing it to feel good.
Yeah.
And perform well.
Yeah.
And the consequence is, you end up looking good.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Natural following, isn't it?
Exactly right.
We've kind of covered your mind stuff early doors
yep.
today, haven't we?
Totally.
So is there anything on Surf Media Insight, segment number four, we want to share?
Well, there's a couple of things. I thought I'd give a shout out to Adam Amin, who's been on the show and is a local guy surfing Jaws, which was pretty impressive to see. I mean, he's kind of really cranking it up. So well done, Adam.
I cannot imagine what it must be like taking off.
I know.
Looking down the line. Just be in this moment now. Here's a little imagination game for you. Just be on the roof of that weight, like on the lip, and just taking strokes. And just feeling the board start to kind of hover down the lip. And just imagine
holy
that.
Holy.
It must be such a rush. You can see when people get addicted to it.
Well, I think once you've done it, that's the thing. It's a bit like you go, woo,
yeah.
I've done it now. I'm through the...
Yeah, and the high must be like a drug.
Yes. It is in...
Like a full-on ecstasy drug.
Absolutely intense. I was just trying to find as well, because this sort of links into this, is that the closeout... on, I think it was the North Shore. And actually there was one photographer, thankfully, not very serious, serious enough to need a surgery, but I don't think any lives lost. It was on Oahu, the outer reefs of Oahu, and where there's a huge closeout, which is unexpected, and the jet skis are in the impact zone. And watching these guys get out of the way is breathtaking and gets the heart pounding and just, you can't appreciate the ferocity of how that must feel to be in that channel. When that shit starts to happen, having been in what are sort of tiny micro closeouts in beaches around the UK, when you think, shit, that's coming down on my head, to watch these guys and to watch the final jet ski where one of the photographers was injured launch up and over the lip of the wave. Whew. I'm still kind of having cold sweats about it now, and I wasn't even there.
It is remarkable how there are not more deaths in big wave surfing. Because I think what happens, I've had people, let's say you're sort of your layman who doesn't really, isn't really involved in surfing, will see a bit of footage of, let's say, Jaws and someone wiping out and go, oh, he must have died. I've had that before. And you go, no, just that's normal. And they're like, yeah, but look how much whitewater, like, how are they? It's a weird, when we see footage of people wiping out on massive waves, you do kind of go, well, how the fuck can you, how can you live through that? But it is amazing what the human body can go through.
And then the most innocuous thing, the wipes
pounding
us out.
Yeah. The other one I want to mention is Peter Mell.
Oh,
at Mavericks.
You got me, yeah.
That's maybe the wave of ever. I can't, like, you got lead.
Yeah.
The Millennium Wave. You've got, it wasn't Koa Rotham, it was his brother, Makua.
Yeah.
That was like a 70-foot chopes and thick, like the disgustingly thick. Yeah. So that's both chopes. There have been some immense bombs at Pipe, obviously. I mean, Pipe's Pipe, but it's never giant, giant.
Yeah.
Pipe is, well, it's third reef, but you know, Pipe is Pipe. It's just going to be so hollow. Arguably the most hollow wave in the world. But Mavericks is a slabby, rancid takeoff, sharky, you know, dark water, green, dark sort of browny, like our water in a way. Not a romantic spot, really. And it's taken a lot of lives. And Peter Mell,
who's 52, by the way,
who's 52, gets the deepest pit with the thickest lip I think I have ever seen.
And he's got his arms up, celebrating.
Yeah. He's kind of confused at the end.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like, what just happened? If you've seen his body language, he sits on his board just going, it's almost like he's not stoked. He can't comprehend it. He's put in, what, 30, 35 years at that break?
It's a paddling as well, isn't it?
Paddling. Oh, yeah.
And so
Mavs is paddle. Oh, they don't do.
Oh, I mean, it's the two things in that is that kind of link all the way back to what we started saying, even at the very beginning of this whole Mindful Surfer experience, the podcast in itself, is that your best wave, when people say, oh, it's all easy for you, your best wave is yet to come. And Peter Mell is 52 years old. He's an amazing surfer. He's a big wave legend. And he's still, at 52, has found what is probably his best wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Inspiring.
Very inspiring. Let's keep that in mind. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Take care.
We'll see you again soon.
Look forward to seeing you soon.